Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And we're pleased to welcome back as our special guest, State Representative Aaron Regenberg, a Providence Democrat. Thank you for joining us, Representative.
Thanks, Scott. Ian, it's always a pleasure to come by the public radio studio.
Progressive Democrats scored a string of legislative victories in last week's primary election when the House of Representatives resumes action in January. John DeSimone, John Carnevale, and Ray Gallison will be among the lawmakers who will no longer be there. Representative Regenberg, how would you describe the impact that that will have?
Well, first of all, before drawing any inferences, I think you got to point out the biggest factor in the progressive victories last week are this group of talented, hardworking, committed candidates. You know, it's hard to win any race as a first-time candidate, particularly some of the upsets that we saw. So those individuals deserve, incredible credit for the work they put in. Any election, you got folks on one side or other who try to draw meanings, and sometimes they go too far. I don't want to do that, so call me out if you think I'm doing that. But I do think it is hard to objectively deny that in the last few elections in Rhode Island, the presidential primary in April, the statewide primary last week, we have seen a clear pattern. Candidates who run effective campaigns on bold, progressive platforms coming out on top, often despite significant institutional advantages of their opponents. So to me, that speaks to a very real hunger among a whole lot of voters for political leadership that has the guts to stand up and say, we're going to fight for all Rhode Islanders, not just the wealthy or the well-connected few. Issues like the fight for 15, for a living wage for all working families, like earned sick leave so no Rhode Islander has to choose between their kids' health and paying the bills, like bold climate action so we can get off these fossil fuels while we still have a chance, criminal justice reform so we can have a justice system in which Black lives really do matter. These are issues that, from my perspective, they're not just the smart and effective and morally correct things to do. They're also what voters are demanding, and it turns out what voters are rewarding. And so I certainly believe the General Assembly would be well-served to take note of that. That's how democracy is supposed to work.
Are those issues you just mentioned your top priorities for the next legislative session?
Certainly, those are some of the top issues I'm going to be working on. And I think hearing reports from out in the field, those are some of the issues that folks ran on. So I do think, talking about last week's election, one thing that we can't chalk it up to, and I hear this sometimes, is a sort of generalized anti-establishment, anti-leadership kind of sentiment. By and large, these were specifically progressive victories. These were progressive issues that were resonating. And we can tell that because some of the hardest fought challenges in the primary were against progressive incumbents, folks like Representatives Kathy Fogarty, Teresa Tanzi, who won their primaries last week, in part because they are lovely, wonderful human beings, and also in part because they were able to point to their progressive record, their achievements in moving that agenda forward. So
let's hold you there and go to a question from Scott.
It seems to me that the drift, particularly in the House where you are, is going to depend a lot on who Speaker Mattiello, should he survive his election, I think he probably will, chooses as majority leader. Do you have a favorite right now who you'd like to see to replace John DeSimone?
Folks on the outside, pundits, are talking a lot about the majority leader race. On the inside, it's not really as much of an issue. I think most people are really focused on November. We've got a general election, which could determine a whole lot of things. So I think most people are focused on the general election right now.
Governor Gina Raimondo has staged a series of education-related events this week. The initiatives include setting goals for improving reading and making college-level courses available to some high school students. Education is a subject that's near and dear to the heart of our guest, Representative Regenberg. So do you think Governor Raimondo has the right focus when it comes to improving public education, or would you do it differently?
This week, we saw some ambitious goals come out of the office, and I think certainly goals are important. They have value for us to reach high. Obviously, the most important work is how do we reach those goals. When it comes to K-12, there are some very complicated issues we need to resolve, and there are also some really simple issues. In the legislature right now, what I'm focused on is some of those simple issues. So, for example, it is a lot harder to learn when you're sitting in a building that is falling apart, that has mold, asbestos, a leaky ceiling. It's also a moral travesty that we're sending so many of our children into these facilities every day. So I'm going to continue working on that. In my first year in the legislature, I organized a tour for the speaker, some of my colleagues, to actually see these city schools. There are some things you need to see to believe. And so I think we need to continue fighting for investment there. When it comes to higher education, to me, this cuts really deep. Rhode Island is one of 10 states that invests more in the Department of Corrections, in our prison system, than we invest in public higher education. That is shameful. It is a sin. And it's one that has very real consequences, both when it comes to academic attainment and achievement. You know, it's a lot harder to finish school when you're mortgaging your future to do it. It's harder to get to class on time when you're working two jobs to pay for that class. But also, it has some devastating economic consequences. My generation is drowning under student loan debt right now. I can't tell you how many of my friends are unable to move forward on that new business idea, to buy a home, to invest in our local economy, because so much money is getting extracted every month to pay for their debt. By the way, it's not just a millennial issue. It's our families. It's our parents. Can't count how many constituents have come to me talking about how they're struggling to pay for their kids' tuition. So I believe it is time for Rhode Island to step up and commit to tuition-free public higher education. It is not a radical idea. Most countries in the world have this. And so I'm currently researching and drafting and plan to introduce legislation to that effect when the session starts in January.
I think the governor's doing a great job on PR. Now, I hope there's a follow through. I think Representative Regenberg is correct when he says we need to invest in higher education. Whether or not Rhode Island can afford on our own without some federal help to go tuition free for all of the public colleges is still a problematic, I'd say. I think we could probably start with CCRI and then see what happens. But I do think I'm encouraged by the discussion started by his candidate, Bernie Sanders, a senator from Vermont, on the idea of making public colleges tuition-free.
Well, let's switch gears briefly, and we're almost out of time, but there was a preliminary settlement announced Monday between Kurt Schilling and three of his former fellow 38 Studios executives for $2.5 million over the failure of the company. Representative Regenberg, do you support the idea of establishing an independent investigation to probe what happened with 38 Studios?
First of all, I join a whole lot of voices before me who are calling on the Attorney General and the state police to release documents related to that investigation. The public has a right to know. They are demanding transparency, and I sure as heck think that we need to provide it for them. I don't know the degree to which revisiting this all again is the best use of our resources. For me, it's really about looking forward. Now, I kind of hate to say this because we've had some great success in luring businesses to Rhode Island. And that's, you know, it's a good thing when we're building business excitement about the state. It's a good thing. So I don't want to be a wet blanket. But I have had conversations with small business owners in my district who say, you know, $13, $14 million for an out-of-state company when I've been here for years, paying all my taxes, investing in the local economy. There's got to be a balance there. And maybe we are at that balance right now. Maybe we're not. I don't have the answers. But my hope is that if there's any good thing that's come out of this 38 Studios catastrophe, it is a greater willingness to actually think critically about these deals that we make and you know, call out things if they don't appear exactly right.
All right, we're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Great to be here.
And Providence Democratic State Representative Aaron Regenberg.
Thanks for having me.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoyed the conversation, follow our website at ripr.org.
Major funding for Political Roundtable is provided by the Rhode Island Foundation, using philanthropy to move Rhode Island forward. Details at rhodeislandfoundation.org.